said, come on over, baby. Baby, you can't go wrong. We ain't faking.
This is Global Radio Talk Show.com. Coming to you today from London, England and San Diego, California. My name is Ed Cohen. I'm the editor of GlobalBusinessNews.net and the editor of Global HR News and your host on GlobalRadioTalkShow.com. Our very special guest today is Wendy Kendall, based in London. She's a global talent strategy expert and an executive coach. Wendy Kendall advises corporations and executives to think differently about global talent development. She's an organizational psychologist for more than 20 years and a UK military psychologist. Wendy has lived and worked overseas for the past 15 years. She's established her own practice going back to 2003 and worked with nearly 3,000 global leaders and managers in that time. Her work has focused on assisting multinational companies and international NGOs, that's non-governmental organizations such as Brookings Institution and Carnegie Endowment for Peace, Gates Foundation, and others. Her work, once again, has focused on assisting these companies and organizations to implement global talent development strategies that prepare their future leaders for what's called the fourth industrial revolution. Her website is wendykendall.com. Let's welcome Wendy Kendall.
Oh, hi, Ed. Thank you. It's really a pleasure to be here with you.
It's my pleasure. You have written some posts. They are wildly popular on LinkedIn and through different business channels. What's coming? What is the fourth industrial revolution?
Yeah, well, I mean, this topic was actually the subject of the World Economic Forum at Davos earlier this year. And, you know, they had a week's worth of activities there trying to explain the coming of the fourth industrial revolution and what that might mean for business. But putting it very simply, this is the age of hyperconnectivity and the breaking down of silos across the world. And it has implications for global talent development in many different ways. So that's really what the fourth industrial revolution is in a nutshell.
Let's back up a little bit and go a little deeper. So what was the third industrial revolution?
So the third industrial revolution was the kind of the age of computing and digitization. And we saw the growth of computing power across the world. As we move into the fourth industrial revolution, we're seeing that computing power becoming highly networked and exponentially powerful and ubiquitous because of that.
So this is digitalization. What is that in a nutshell?
What we have essentially is, you know, we had the growth of the internet, but then through the addition of sort of sensors, which are attached to objects, we now have the growth of the internet things. So the internet, which was already connecting people through computers, is now connecting people and objects through computers. And what is also happening is that those sensors are becoming smaller and smaller, and they're being embedded into biological systems. So that's where we get this sense of hyperconnectivity that is just spreading and moving across the world. And as I said earlier, it has a lot of implications for the future of work and the way in which jobs will be the kind of jobs that people will do in the future. But overall, we have a great speed of connectivity now. We have the very real possibility of everything becoming connected to everything else. And we also have the breaking down of silos because of that hyperconnectivity. So the world is becoming kind of shaped in different ways because of the impact of that hyperconnectivity.
So the sensors that you mentioned, we're not just thinking about security precautionary sensors. This is probably the foundation of the smartphone, isn't it? It senses where you want to go or what you're thinking,
yeah,
and connects you,
yeah,
or fills out the rest of the sentence or,
yeah,
word or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. So that's just one example of it. I mean, in addition to those sensors that are either in handheld devices or in everyday objects in our home, so, you know, the idea of a smart fridge which will order your food for you, going now into biological systems where, I mean, at the moment people have, for example, these Fitbit and, you know, other kind of devices that they attach to themselves that monitor their sleep, that monitor their wakefulness, the amount of activity they do, the kinds of activities, the geography they're at, the geographical location. Alongside all of those sensors, we also have the rise of artificial intelligence, which is giving us so much more processing power, starting to anticipate the trends of what groups of people will do and what also individuals will do. So that's essentially meaning that we're starting to create a situation where we can harness all of the people in the world, you know, the kind of collective talent and creativity and potential for the creation of knowledge of much more of the world than we ever could do in the previous time.
Fascinating, isn't it? So yeah. You are a psychologist, so mm-hmm. Here we are talking about things. A psychologist deals with people, right? And so from your view, where's, you know, define the problem and then maybe talk about it.
Yeah. I think the issue is that the fourth industrial revolution is really going to change the ways in which we interact with the world around us. So that's one part of it. How do we interact with the world around us? Part of that is how are we going to be interacting with people in the world around us in future? So now this year, I've seen articles saying this is the year for virtual reality. Technology is growing so quickly. Virtual reality is really coming online and into its own. That, you know, when we think about it from a global talent development point of view or a global career point of view, we could even be in close collaboration with people all over the world through a virtual reality context. So, you know, this is changing both the way in which we interact with the world, the way in which we interact with people, and therefore the nature of the job that we will be doing in future as well. And all of those things will have an impact on how companies grow and develop and deploy talent across the world.
Now, with that in mind, we're both dealing with multinational organizations. Many of these organizations, I mean, we're talking about people who run the organizations. You know, computers may run the world, but people run the computers.
So far, exactly.
But the policies and practices haven't kept up or really haven't tuned in on maximizing the way this connectivity can work, especially when we're talking about mobility of people and communications. It's all there for company managers in the home office to communicate with somebody, even though they're thousands of miles away, but they're not doing it as well.
Exactly. I mean, one of my main concerns when I've been working with people who are identified as global talents working for multinational corporations, and they've been sent around to different global assignments. And what you start to see, and what, you know, in discussion with global talent directors and so on, the discussion that we've had is around the ways in which we're supporting people in those careers and in those positions. So we are still, or have been, supporting people in essentially transmitting knowledge across the world. So why would you send an individual out to live in another country? Very often used to be in order to take knowledge to that country, to that new place, and to spread that knowledge when they got there, share their working practices, their new ideas about how to work and how to create business. At the same time, there's also an idea that we move people across the world so that they can receive knowledge. So this is, let's say, an idea of receiving and transmitting knowledge through global assignment. With the hyperconnectivity, essentially we're starting to move to a position where we need to think about creating value through these global assignments. So rather than just transmit the knowledge or receive the knowledge, we actually need to be harnessing all the potential of that king. So why would we send a person to go and live in a country in future if they can get on a VR headset and they can be in close collaboration with their team anyway? What inherent value would it have? How can that activity create value for people and for companies as well? So I think this highlights the ways in which we need to start changing our thinking around the why and the how and the what when it comes to global talent development for the fourth industrial revolution.
So VR, virtual reality, have you ever put on one of those headsets? I haven't.
you know, not one of the newest ones, but the funny thing is that the very, very first project that I worked on when I left my master's degree and I went working for the military was to help engineers develop virtual reality training for soldiers. So even 20 years ago, we were exploring how could we network people across the world and have them train together in a virtual environment. I can tell you the technology that we had 20 years ago was really clunky and really heavy compared to what it's like nowadays.
Let's get back to the world of global talent, the rise of the global class, which means a lot of people like, I guess, you and me in different countries around the world who may or may not be working for multinational companies, but they have a smartphone and they know how to code, and so they're able to communicate. So this is like the future for our kids or grandkids, yet the future is now, particularly because of the rise of next gen, the age brackets, and then the next kids who are 20 years old now and about to enter the workforce in 3 or 4 years from now. It's going to be very different than it is right now, isn't it?
It's interesting. One of the messages that we've been sending people when it comes to growing your career across the world, one of the philosophies has been that we need to show the ways in which we're similar to other people across the world. And that's a nice thing if we can demonstrate our similarities and our commonalities. But when it comes to growing a global career, the impact of this hyperconnectivity has been to kind of flatten the market. So at the same time as everyone having a stake in having a global career, it means you're competing potentially against everybody else in order to make your next career step. So the key thing that we have to start thinking about is what makes us different and how is that valuable? I have the same thing. I have a 19-year-old daughter who's just heading off into the world of work as well. And when I think about what I would advise her to do when it comes to applying for whether it's internships or whether it's her first position in a global multinational, I would be saying to her, think about what are the ways in which you're different and what are the ways in which you can bring value to a team through your differences. And that implies as well that we need to enhance our abilities to collaborate even though we're different from other people. So that is really a big point and a big change that this fourth industrial revolution is going to have on us. We have to get really clear about where can we add value, where can we create value, and how can we harness our differences and our uniqueness.
So you're talking about global mindset, but from a different perspective almost.
Definitely, definitely. I mean, what really struck me when I look back into how we approach global mobility is a lot of our philosophy was around what they call the U-shaped curve of integration. And this is a model that's going back even to the 1950s. And, you know, the world was a very different place in the 1950s compared to now. But that model was essentially saying, how can we smooth out this U-shaped curve of integration? How can we help people to be less different? And how can we help them to experience less of a downturn in their success after they have a move abroad? And looking forward, when we look at that model, essentially it's a deficit model. It's saying, what are you missing and how can we fill the gap? And now when we're looking forward, we have to start thinking about how can we ensure that this move and these cross-border moves that we make are actually creating value for us rather than where are the gaps and how can we fill them?
I have a question. So the U-shape means, real quick, that, oh boy, I'm going on an assignment and I'm going to go out and enjoy a new restaurant and walking down the streets, so enjoying the nightlife, going to the cafe and meeting some new people. Now then, you settle in, especially if you have a family with you, and then 2-3 months later, oh, God, where am I? you know, that dawns on you and you miss the familiarity of home and the comfort, and you feel apart and you're losing contact with what's going on in other people's lives, and all of a sudden it just piles up. And so that's the you when you dip down into depression or being alone, and the connectivity with new people around you seems foreign and strange, and you know, you wake up and you don't know who you are anymore. And then after a while, I guess with training or with the right attitude anyway, or somebody reaching out who's been there and done that before, they help you along and you get back into a new frame of work and you come back up, if you will. That's the U thing, right?
Exactly. So that the bottom of that U-shaped curve is essentially what gets called culture shock. So the idea is that perhaps with more and more exposure or more understanding, you eventually recover out of that culture shock and you get to a point of acceptance or integration. The smoothing out of that is the smoothing out of differences between you and your new culture.
Now, all that takes a lot of effort and time, and yet it's been going on for years and years and years. But there's another way of looking at it that apparently can also work, and that's more of an S. Is that correct? S curve?
Yeah, exactly. A mathematical curve that has been used to explain other things, such as the spread of innovation. So, you know, the S curve is out there. It's not just a creation out of one individual's head, let's say. Here was the idea that struck me when I first moved abroad, and we were talking in, you know, I went on some of these workshops as well, talking about culture shock, and was exposed to this U-shaped curve of integration. And the thing that really struck me was that when I was working for the military, they never plan for a U-shaped integration curve when they deploy overseas. They plan for more of an S-curve. So they say, okay, we're going to deploy to a new environment. We need to hit the ground running. We need to be successful as soon as we hit the ground. And we need to learn rapidly and get the job done to reach a certain objective in the minimum amount of time and, you know, depending on the circumstance, with the minimum of casualties. So they don't plan for a U-shaped curve. It's not the mindset. What they do is they look at an initial transition period while the guys are learning about how to operate in this environment, and then a big upsurge in ability to operate. And then, okay, we've achieved our mission. We're now ramping down, and then we're going to move on to the next deployment afterwards. So for the military, it's more of a series of S-curves. And just having had that experience of working with them really made me question whether we could apply something like an S-shape mindset to the process of moving people across borders within a multinational company.
Now, doesn't this mean helicoptering, if you will, and hovering over the assignee and family with coaching, connectivity, the magic word again, in other words, staying in touch and not really being like a helicopter mom, but to have an expectation that there will be issues and avoiding that, if you will, through continuous learning, acculturation, integration, localization to some degree, every step of the way, rather than wait for something to hit bottom.
Yeah, I think what it is it's planning for this to be a growth experience. So on the one side, we can talk about the trauma of moving across a border, which is a bit more of a U-shaped idea. But at the same time, psychology anyway, we know that when people are exposed to stresses and challenges, actually there's a lot of growth that is stimulated because of it. So let's plan and work for that rather than planning and working for the downturn. So what would that look like? That would essentially mean helping individuals, first of all, to understand why they're going on a global assignment and what kind of value they can create when they get there. And I think that's a really, really important point. You know, at the moment, do we ask the family, how is this going to create value for you? Not so much. Not in my experience. Do we really focus on helping the person going on assignment to identify what's the value you're going to create with the differences you're bringing? Because, you know, the sense of getting lost in a global assignment comes from being told that all the great things that you know you do well, all your talents and abilities, well, now you've got to kind of smooth them down so that you can fit in and not put your head above the parapet too much. Don't be too different. That causes a lot of identity and, you know, the downturn in the experience that people have. So setting up the environment and setting up the mindset to look for and harness the ways in which they're going to create value.
Wow. It sounds so obvious. Doesn't it obvious? I mean, doesn't it sound obvious to you?
I agree. I know. Yeah. And, you know, I'm not the only one talking about this as well. I think this is occurring to more and more people. And we're starting to question these kinds of models and mindset that we've been holding so dear for kind of 60 or 70 years now.
Right. As we come to a close of this conversation with Wendy Kendall, That's WendyKendall.com. I want to bring up the recent article, The Expatriate ROI Zero Sum Game. And this is exactly what we're just talking about, isn't it? It's not going to necessarily be a zero sum. In other words, how do you measure? And where can you find the value? How can you identify it? And on an individual basis. Now, doesn't this cost the company a lot of money? I suppose it will cost the company even more money if the assignment blows up, but doesn't it cost money to do this?
To do the ROI approach? To do the S-shaped curve. No, I mean, I think, you know, it's going to cost you at least as much money to take a U-shaped approach as to take an S-shaped approach. The difference is in the questions you ask, and it's free. Last time I looked, to ask different questions. So, you know, why did I call this the zero-sum game? Companies have had, when you look in the literature, one of the things companies really struggle with is capturing the return on investment from global assignments. And as you rightly said, they're very, very expensive. People on global assignment are some of the company's most expensive employees. And if it goes wrong, then it's a huge cost to the company, but it's also a huge cost to the person and to the family. So there's a lot invested. But when you look at it, essentially the issue has come because we've not been very good at understanding and auditing what is the value that is created. Is it new knowledge? Is it new networks? Is it new processes and procedures? And when we just have that mindset around value creation, it changes the types of questions we ask and we get a lot more focused. So we ask, why would we send this individual to this position on global assignment? How are they going to create value when they get there? What are the ways in which they're different and how will that create value? This is really just about in inverted commas, about a change in mindset and a change in the types of questions we start to ask. And I think through that, it will start to percolate and create some differences in the processes, the procedures, the methods, the training courses, and so on.
So in your article, you talk about a framing, how can people and organizations flourish together using global mobility within a knowledge economy in a way that creates competitive advantage for all. Do you want to sum up on that?
Yeah. So for me, when I looked at what could be the strategic question to kind of ask myself, and, you know, for a global talent director out there, I think a version of this question is something that they could ask in their next strategic workshop when it comes to looking at how they do global mobility in their company. And that's to ask, how can both our employees and our company work together to use global mobility in order to create competitive advantage and to create value? And if they use that as a framing question, I think it will start to change and they will see the ways in which they can start to implement a value creation approach to their global mobility activities.
Just to sum up here, about the fourth industrial revolution and digitalization, that's what we're talking about here. And the people element of all that is what your specialty is. And so are there new coaches needed or can old coaches be taught new tricks?
I embrace the power of possibility when it comes to people changing. We really have to step back and look at whether the methods that we're using as coaches and the mindset that we're approaching global mobility, whether it's really still in keeping with what the age of hyperconnectivity is going to bring to us. So what I would say is, as a coach, when you're thinking about supporting people, please do look at this value creation side of things and ask questions that are focused on that. It's really as simple and as difficult as that. I think we have to question what are the ways in which that U-shaped curve has shaped us as coaches. So, you know, focusing on finding the deficits and plugging them rather than focusing on what the person does well, their strengths, their abilities, their differences, and how we can harness them so that it's more meaningful and it creates more of a sense of engagement and value for the individual.
I've been talking with Wendy Kendall. Her website is WendyKendall, WendyKendall.com. I want you all to go and check it out. You're going to see a wealth of information. Wendy Kendall, as you could tell, is a global talent strategy expert and an executive coach. Wendy, thanks very much for being our guest today on GlobalRadioTalkShow.com. I certainly invite you to continue your contributions in GlobalBusinessNews.net, and I welcome you back on the show in the future.
It was a great pleasure. Thanks very much, Ed. Thank you.
Thank you. And this is Ed Cohen signing off with Wendy. Wendy's in London, and I'm in San Diego, California. GlobalRadioTalkShow.com.